We return tonight to the book of Genesis and the story of Joseph, the 11th son of Jacob. Joseph was the privileged son in so many ways. We think of Joseph's life, and it began with, some people might call it the blessing, but really it was the curse of favoritism and how favoritism wrecked the lives of so many in the patriarchal family and each generation. Last time we were together and looked in the book of Genesis, we were here and we read about Joseph being sold into slavery by his brothers, all the animosity that accumulated with Joseph from his brothers, and he was sold into a caravan of Ishmaelite traders. Kind of ironic that the Ishmaelites were the cousins of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and they were part of the family, descendants of Abraham. And yet in the fourth generation, the traders of the Ishmaelites come through and they purchase this boy slave and take him down to Egypt. Taken to Egypt, and they're sold to a man named Potiphar. That's a long way from the multicolored coat. When we think about the privileges that Joseph had, and we think about his life, we think about the favoritism. Go on to that next slide, would you, Andy? The multicolored coat, the coat of favoritism, the coat of jealousy, if you would, and all the things that came with and were a part of the story of Joseph's life. Incredible what Joseph had gone through and would go through and was going through at every stage of his life. I mean, if you just take a look at this story tonight and where and what happened to Joseph in this part of the story tonight, you would wonder what was going to happen to this teenager. He was 17 years old. Though when you think about, we've had quite a few people and stories, it seems like, in the last couple of months about people that were 17 years old. We talked about David was likely thought to be 16 or 17 years old, maybe 18 when he killed Goliath. Again, a young man, and you have others in the scriptures. You have a man named Daniel, a young man, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and you have Mary, and you just have several important characters in the Bible who were 15 or 16 or 17 years old, and their stories and how they dealt with them are incredible and interesting to look at. Yes, Joseph is a long way from the coat of many colors, and tonight we're going to pick up the story in Genesis chapter 39. If you want to follow along, I'm going to read verses 1 through 21 of Genesis chapter 39. I'm sorry. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian, was one of Pharaoh's officials. The captain of the guard bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From that time on, he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned. The Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by the cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed, When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside and ran outside of the house. She kept the cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. That Hebrew slave you brought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. When the master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. What an amazing story. Amazing characters. We begin tonight with a picture of Potiphar. Potiphar is an interesting but kind of passing character in the broader story of Joseph's life. And Potiphar had an important role in Joseph's life. And though his role is short and we don't know that much about him, we know that his impact on Joseph and the story and the plan of God is significant. Clearly, Potiphar was good at some things, but he was not good at others. He paid attention, apparently, to the work that he did, and he was probably very thorough with the details, and he had risen to a high level of responsibility, but at home he did not take care of the details that he should have done. He was probably a very busy man. He was important. He had a career. He was very busy with a lot of things. He was influential, but he missed greatly in the things that were very important in his life, in the meeting of the needs of his wife. Well, we know a few things about Potiphar. Obviously, he was Egyptian. He had grown up in that society. He had built his way to the top. Whether or not he came to his great position of responsibility solely on his own abilities and talents, or whether he was born into a family of nobility, we do not know, but we know that he was Egyptian, and he was a leader. He was in the top echelon of leadership within the household of Pharaoh himself. We also know about Potiphar that he was very wealthy, that he had a large, sizable household. He had many servants, both inside and outside, apparently. He had fields and he had property. He had much to take care of. And so he was a man of great influence, a man of great wealth, a man of a property. And he had so many things, Pharaoh did. He is one of Pharaoh's close servants. He obviously was someone that was close to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh gave him great responsibility and so many things to take care of. He had a high position of responsibility. What he's described here is the captain of the guard. That had to be a high responsibility within Pharaoh's household, and he was responsible for the protection, perhaps, of Pharaoh himself and security. And so he had to be a man that was highly trusted himself. And when you look at Egyptians, Pharaoh had to be one of those people that was seen and was in a great position of importance. We also know about Potiphar that he trusted Joseph. He was able to trust, and he saw in Joseph the abilities, the potential. When he purchased Joseph as a slave, perhaps he had purchased many of his servants that way, and they became his slave or his servants. But he saw something different in Joseph, and very soon as he gave responsibility to Joseph, he saw in Joseph this man who was trustworthy, this man who would do what he was asked to be done, and he was able to handle the responsibility. And we're told that very quickly Joseph rose in the leadership of the home. And by the time we come to even a few verses into the story, we read Joseph's self-description. It is that Potiphar has made me the number one leader in the household. That's a lot of responsibility that had been given to this Hebrew slave. He had been placed in charge very early on in Joseph. Joseph had demonstrated his competence and his character and his ability, and And he had shown these things to Potiphar that he could do what he was asked to do. But it was deeper than just his talent and his ability. There was something inside of Joseph that caught Potiphar's mind and eye and heart. And he looked at Joseph and he watched Joseph. He watched how he worked. He watched how he dealt with the business dealings that he had. And everything that Joseph did, he demonstrated a competence and a trustworthiness that the description is that Joseph found favor in the eyes of Potiphar. He found favor with him. We know that Joseph produced well. He did the work that he was asked to do. He did it thoroughly and he took care of it. Potiphar was prosperous because of Joseph. And you just have this picture of, I don't know how prosperous Potiphar was before Joseph began to work for him, but everything Joseph did was just right. Everything about Joseph and his character and his work ethic was of competence and character. And so from early on, Joseph demonstrated that competence and character, and the prosperity came to Potiphar and his household. And in fact, it just looked like from Joseph that finally something good was going to happen to Joseph and his own abilities now. Now, this is different than when he was at home and he was the favorite son and he was treated with favoritism and again the curse of favoritism that impacted his early life. It's different when he's in Potiphar's household. Joseph does what he's supposed to do. He's able to demonstrate his work ethic and his character and his intelligence, and his character emerges as being very strong. Everything that he did produced well for his master. Potiphar was prosperous under Joseph's work. He was successful, the scriptures say, in everything he did. Joseph was promoted to be in charge of all that Potiphar owned. So the word that he was just promoted up through the ranks, and he was trustworthy. Potiphar had this personal trust in Joseph. He was a great blessing to this man who trusted him so much. Everything looked so good for Joseph. I mean, he finally was in a place where he was treated fairly. And it just seemed like finally Joseph got perhaps what he deserved. And things were going so well. It looked so good for Joseph. And then we have coming into the story Potiphar's wife. We think of this woman, which we know even less about than Potiphar. But we know that perhaps she was neglected. But certainly she was looking for her needs to be met in the wrong place. And so she comes into the story and into the picture in chapter 39, verse 67, describes how she perceived Joseph. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." Temptation. Opportunity. Whatever words you use to describe this part of the story, but this woman whose needs were not met, and this woman who, whether or not completely her fault or Potiphar's wife or both of their faults or whatever the dynamics in their marriage and their relationship, she's outside of God's plan for marriage, and she begins to look somewhere else for her needs to be met. And so we have in the story a picture of temptation. We have for us, as we consider Joseph's life, this situation that he did not ask for, that he did not himself bring himself into this situation and cause, but something that again will impact and affect Joseph's life in many ways. Temptation, opportunity. But Joseph very quickly reacts and responds. Joseph right away shows a strong resolve to do what is right. And we see everything in Joseph of what he should do in this situation of temptation. Number one, he shows a great integrity. He shows a consistency. He reacts well to the temptation that comes to him. The first thing that I would say about Joseph's character and reaction is three words. Simply, it says in verse 8, but he refused. When temptation came to Joseph, he determined immediately that he was not going to give in to temptation. He was not going to allow the situation that had been brought to him to cause him to change his character and do something that he knew would be so wrong. He tries to explain to Potiphar's wife. I imagine Joseph felt pretty trapped here. He felt like he didn't know what to do, but he knew it was wrong. And so he explained. He said, "How can I do this? With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" There's several things about what he says in these words that I think are interesting and an important part of the story. Number one is Joseph did not want to violate his master's trust. He was thinking about that. He was thinking about how much the master had trusted him and how he had done what was right. Everything he had done well, and he had done with the right motive and the right heart, and everything that the master had given him to do, he did it faithfully, and he responded. First, I noticed this in Joseph, that he didn't want to violate Potiphar's trust. He had that in his heart, that he had the right relationship toward man, toward this man that he worked for. But even deeper for Joseph is Joseph had a deep sense that he did not want to violate what God wanted for him. He knew it was sin. He knew that this was wrong. And he believed in his heart that it would be wrong for Potiphar. It would be wrong for Potiphar's wife. But even deeper in this story, we hear the heart of Joseph, where he knows that it would be wrong against God. And sin is like that. Joseph knew deep in his heart how much it violated the heart of God. He knew it was sin. How could I do, he says in verse 9, how could I do such a wicked thing and sin? Again, he says here, and sin against God. Joseph knew that the sin of adultery, the sin of having another man's wife, this is before the Ten Commandments were given, of course, long before, but yet Joseph knew, and he knew it was wrong. He knew that it would violate the heart of God. And Joseph would not do that. He could not do that. He understood trust. He understood the trust of Potiphar. He understood the violation of sin. He understood the meaning of adultery. And very simply, he refused. He also, it says in verse 10, was very careful. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Those words right there say a whole lot about the character of Joseph as well. Or even be with her. He did what he could to avoid every appearance of evil. We think about the Old Testament or the New Testament, what Paul writes about morality and how important it is that we avoid even the appearance of evil in any way. And other words that we find in the New Testament about sexual immorality. Joseph, long before the New Testament is written, long before the words were spoken by Joseph, Jesus, long before even the Ten Commandments were given, Joseph in his heart knew that he did not want to do evil. And so he tried to avoid to be with Potiphar's wife. Of course, as a slave, I don't know exactly what freedom he had or did not have. But Joseph did all that he could do to avoid the appearance, to avoid the possibility, to avoid the temptation, maybe to avoid even the temptation for Potiphar's wife, and knowing her needs and knowing her personality, knowing her character, knowing maybe about the marriage and all those things. He was careful. Joseph was not at fault. It just reminds me in the area of sexual purity how important it is not only to not deliberately sin, but be very careful about our hearts and our minds. And I think of issues of pornography and how prevalent they can be and the temptation that they can be for people inside and outside of the church, and how God calls us to a holy standard, and pornography and other things that we allow our minds and our hearts to be filled with can draw us toward the unclean or the immoral or the things that are displeasing to God. And whatever they are, wherever they exist, God calls his people to be careful as Joseph was. He refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. And he avoided as much as he could. And again, being the slave and probably being subject not only to Potiphar, but Potiphar's wife and Potiphar's instructions or Potiphar wife's instruction, Joseph did all that he could to avoid it. And then when the day came that we read of in verse 11, it says one day, you know, for Joseph, one day this evil, this injustice, this temptation, the wrong of someone else that is thrust on him, and he can't help. One day it came, and on that day when Joseph became trapped, he became ensnared. He came so close to the temptation, and even so close to the possibility that he would do wrong. What did Joseph do? It says he ran. I mean, he got out. I can't be here anymore. I can't be this close. I am not going to do this evil thing. Whatever it takes, he's gone. Well, that means he runs from Potiphar. He gets out of the house. He leaves. He runs. Joseph's example, figuratively, for temptation in our lives, it's good to remember those words. Number one, but he refused. And number two, he ran. He did not walk. The word doesn't say that he gently said no, and he did not linger. He did not entertain the possibility. He didn't hold on to it with his mind and his heart. He didn't kind of play with the possibility. No, what did Joseph do? It says he ran. He ran away from the temptation. And God helped him to do that. I don't know how tempted Joseph was. Maybe he was and maybe he wasn't. I don't know. In this story, and we just know the possibility is there that he could have fallen, he could have given in to Potiphar's wife's request, and maybe the lust, and maybe all the things that are part of the sexual nature. I don't know how tempted Joseph was, but when he came to the place where, boy, the rubber met the road, and he had to decide, he did the right thing, he ran. He ran because he had character. He ran because he already knew who he was. He ran because of who he believed God was. He ran because he knew the difference between right and wrong, and he was able to stand up to right and wrong and make the decision that he wanted to do. Joseph had great character. In the days of success, Joseph would show character, and in the moments when he was tempted, in the moments when there was an opportunity to do wrong, and you might think no one would ever know, what does Joseph do? Joseph has character. When others around him, when others were around him, Joseph had the same character. When it was good people around him, he had the same character. And when it was people that were doing wrong in front of Joseph, he had the same character. Joseph had the character in the midst of people that did what was right and people that did what was wrong. In the moment when the temptress was alone with him, he did what was right. Potiphar's wife, spurned so many times by Joseph, and who knows what all went through her mind and her heart. Again, we don't know a lot about her, but we do see her character as well. And what does she do? She becomes angry. She becomes more angry perhaps at Potiphar, perhaps at Joseph as well, but she begins to blame someone else for her misery, someone else for her character, someone else for her own actions. And what little we know about Potiphar's wife is she falsely accuses Joseph, and she takes the role, she plays the role of the victim, and she's the one that has been hurt, and she's the one that's been wronged. I mean, if you're looking for a story in the Bible, and there are several that so clearly the wrong person is being accused, this is one of them. Joseph did everything he could to do what's right. I don't know what else he could have done, but when the situation came, he refused, and when the situation came, he ran, and he paid the consequences for not doing what Potiphar's wife wanted him to do. Again, I wonder if it was for the attention of her husband that she played this game, and you know, you just kind of see her crying around the house and holding on to something and saying, "Oh, that Hebrew slave, he tried to come in and make game of me," the one translation says, and And so she tells her lies. She covers her own shame, hiding her own failures, masking, covering her immorality, whatever and whoever she is. She screams for help, and she spins her yarn. And Joseph is trapped in what he could not control, and where it's not his fault, but yet there he is. Potiphar, again, he's a man with much power. He's a man with much responsibility. He's a man with all kinds of oversight for other people, but yet he misses the important part of his life. He misses what's really going on at home. He believes the story of his wife, or at least it seems that he believes the story of his wife, although I think it's interesting that Potiphar did not have Joseph killed. He probably could have, a captain of the guard, but maybe Potiphar knew, maybe he didn't. I don't know about where his wife was, but whatever it is, he seems to miss again. He misses so much, and he buys the story of Potiphar's wife. It says, when the master heard the story his wife told, he burned with anger. Again, I don't know if indeed he was angry at Joseph because he believed the story. Might be, that's what it seems to be on the surface, and that's possible. But I wonder what else Potiphar could have been angry about. Always there's more than maybe we see in a story, and there's more that may be there, but he burned with anger, and he took it out on Joseph, and so he cast him into prison. So there's Joseph. Now it's the second time he's been thrown into prison, maybe a third if you count going into the pit that his brothers put him in, and then being sold in slavery to the Ishmaelites. And you know, just imagine, you know, strike one, and you know, I've been thrown in this pit. And whether he believed he deserved it at all from any of his pride, I don't know. But then he's sold into slavery, and he realizes, my family is done. It's over. It's over for my father Jacob and my brother Benjamin, and it's over for me. I'm going to a place I don't know, and I'm going to be somebody's slave the rest of my life. And we just go with him down to Egypt. And then he's sold to this man who begins to trust him, and he rises. Where's Joseph during this time? What's happening to him? Innocent. He's doing the right thing. But once again, he's cast into a darkness that's not his own. He's unjustly treated. What happens to Joseph? What happens to his character? Does he lose his character in the unfairness of life? You know, we say, and we sometimes joke to our children, life is not fair. You know, we've all gone through that time when we say it's not fair. I mean, we say that sometimes as adults. It's not fair. And the truth is, we respond, no, life is not fair, but life goes on. And Joseph's story is one of those. No, life is not fair. And it was not fair for Joseph. But Joseph had to make a choice of who he was in the unfairness of life. What was he going to hold on to? What was he going to believe? I mean, there he is. I say, Joseph, at this time, where's that multicolored coat now? I mean, look at you, Joseph. You've lost every possibility of dignity and fairness in your life. So much was taken away from Joseph. But I say there's one thing that was never, ever taken away from Joseph. And that's the same thing that every one of us can have no matter what happens in life, no matter what happens, good or bad. No one can take our faith away. And Joseph held on to his faith. He had a deep faith and a strong faith and an enduring faith and a faith that wasn't rooted in the circumstances of his life. Joseph's faith was rooted in who God was, and he held on to that through each of these stories that take place. Sometimes in the darkest places, the only thing you really have is a faith that God is real and he has not abandoned you. There may be a time in your life that you may come to a place. Maybe you've been through a time in your life where it seems so dark and it just seems like life is not fair and you don't know what's going to happen. But the reality is that God is there. And if you hold on to your faith, God can help you through the darkest times in your life. Joseph still had his faith and he held on to it tightly. God knew that. God knew where Joseph was. You see, the next verse that I didn't read, but we're going to close with tonight, is there's Joseph in the darkness of the prison, and you wonder, what else does he have? Well, number one, he had his faith. And number two, in verse 20, we read these words. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. I want you to know that in the darkest moment of Joseph's life, maybe this was the darkest moment. I would imagine it was. I could be wrong, but I would imagine this may have been the darkest moment in Joseph's life, but God was there. And the reality is that no matter how light or dark your day is, no matter how light or dark your circumstances is, God will always be there. God will never abandon you. God is with you. Joseph held on to his faith, and God held on to Joseph. God did not let Joseph be alone. He was there with him in the prison and in the darkness. That didn't mean that God took away the circumstances. Eventually he did, and God let him out. And you know the rest of the story. But God was with Joseph when he went into that prison and into that dungeon. It's not like God left him for years and years. God was with him in that place during that time. While Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. Reminds me how important it is for us when we go through things that are difficult that we hold on to who God is. We don't throw it aside, and we don't give up easily, and we don't say, God, if you don't fix this, if you don't change this, I'm not going to believe in you. Joseph was able to hold on to who God was no matter what the circumstances in his life. I think that's one of the great lessons of Joseph's life, and there are several, and one of them is this: when you're in a dark place, don't forget that God is there. Don't forget that I can hold on to my faith. We read in the writings of Paul that nothing can separate us from the love of God. There's no circumstances, there's nobody else that can take away our faith and take away our relationship with God. And God was there with Joseph, and that's a beautiful part of the story. Plan to continue at this point, at this verse in 23 next Sunday night, as we continue to look at what happened to Joseph in the prison, what happened in the dungeon of his life, and how did he hold on to faith in God. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, I thank you tonight for the story of Joseph. I thank you, God, for this example of faith in a dark place. I also thank you for the example of a man who refused to do what's wrong. It may have been easier for him in some ways to give in to the temptation or even just to give in to the demands of Potiphar's wife, but Joseph knew it was wrong, and because he knew it was wrong and he had the character to say no, even though he paid the price for it, he did what's right. And God rewarded them. God was with him. God helped him. God never abandoned him, and God brought him out. And we're thankful tonight for the promise that God is with us in difficult times. I pray that you would help our faith to be strong. Help it to be rooted not in our circumstances of how well things are going or how people treat us or what good things happen to us, but God, help our faith be rooted in who you are and a deep, deep faith in the existence of God and that God is watching over our lives, I pray. Thank you for the story tonight and the opportunity to be together. In Jesus' name, amen.